Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units Origins. I'm Paul Verhoeven and my dad, John, is currently sitting across in Sydney. And this week we're talking about one of the last chapters in the book, actually. It's chapter 45. It's called Back at the Start. How does it feel to be so close to the end of the book, Dad?
Look, I've got a couple of editions of your book in the bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
I use a fairly large white marker to delineate the beginning of every new chapter. So the routine for listeners, for the benefit of our lovely listeners,
mm-hmm.
I assume that all our listeners are lovely. The drum is that I read the chapter every week prior to us recording to refresh my memory and to make sure I'm on point. But I've slowly over the months been watching this white piece of paper creep ever so slowly to the back of the book. And it's like in life when you know that at a certain point in the future, something's going to come to an end.
Yeah.
But you kind of don't think about it. You're aware of it. Mm. And if I may give an example, Paul, because I know you like to, you know, follow me down the rabbit hole occasionally.
Occasionally, yes, I do.
And I remember when I was at school.
Oh, we're going that far back. Okay.
Paul. We had to read 1984
mm-hmm.
by George Orwell, one of my absolute favorite books.
Really?
I used to take it on holidays with me and read it by the pool in Bali.
Fucking fun. You sound like a fun kid. What's he reading? Well, literally the phrase Orwellian came from your holiday attitude. God, so hang on. When were you in Bali as a kid?
Oh, no, Paul.
Oh, years later. Right.
Years later, but I don't know what sort of books people, apart from Loose Units and Electric Blue, people bring on their holidays.
Yeah, yeah.
But have you ever
like
read...
to bring the heavy shit.
In Cold Blood. Have you read that?
Oh, fucking hell. You sound like the life of the party. Everyone's drinking daiquiris and John's Paul, over there reading just the... Oh my God.
Paul, I don't go to parties.
No.
I certainly don't. I've never had a daiquiri. Ever.
So when I accuse you of not being fun enough, your defense is, I don't go to parties, I don't drink daiquiris, I'm over there under a shady tree reading Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, thank you very much.
Paul.
Which is, I believe it's a, isn't that a profile of the inner workings of a serial killer?
Well, two serial killers.
Right, okay.
Another one of my favorite reads on holiday is the story about America's greatest... He was an assassin. He was a hitman.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever read... What a terrible story.
Do you know the name?
I'd love to recall the name, but he was a hitman for the mafia.
Yeah.
And in one particular... He was a huge guy.
Yeah.
Weirdly, his name's coming to my mind... similar to Kuklowski, something like that.
Kuklowski? Okay. Right.
Something like that. But Paul, get ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
One of his jobs was to kill some, let's say, bad guy, which is weird, getting one bad guy to kill another bad guy for the mafia.
Mm.
But he took this guy into a cave, and this is in the 1970s, so it's not that long ago.
How do you get someone in a cave without it seeming instantly extremely suspicious?
Good Good call. But anyway, he gets this guy into the cave, and what he did, I don't know how he organized this, but he actually got rats to eat the guy while he was alive. And but if that's not bad enough, look, his job was not to actually use rats as part of the, you know, the sort of the death saga. That was not part of the brief. But what he did, he obviously fulfilled his obligation for the mafia by killing this guy. Yeah. But he introduced the rats as like a bonus. And then, get ready for this, listeners, he filmed the entire episode and then he sent the film to the mafia. And the mafia that received the film were so distressed and upset with what this guy... He'd kind of gone overboard. I mean, he used to take his job really, really seriously. But he also, terrifyingly, he used to kill people in the street at random, testing methods of execution.
Really?
Yes, he'd just go up to any person in the street. He actually loved killing people. And he would use these sort of like ice picks. And he'd just go up to a person at random and he'd just kill them in the street. So he actually loved killing.
That's beyond fucked up.
I know. So that's just one of the books that I used to take on holidays with me.
Right. So the upshot... Okay. Right. So I'm not a... Look, we're in an age of true crime, obviously. The reason this podcast exists... well, there's many reasons, but one of the reasons is the fact that there's just been an explosion of true crime fandom, right? Like, people love, and Loose Uters listeners and readers love the grisly stuff. They want gore, they want death, and there is something so funny about the outward appearance of a true crime fan, which I think statistically is largely female, you know, and very friendly. But the book they're reading as they smile and wave at you is usually about dismemberment or some sort of chaotic murder. It's all really dark stuff. Mm. So I have no problem with the kind of contrast of being on holiday, you know, in a beautiful locale and also just reading something terrifying. Mm. But you're not typically a reader, Dad, are you? You don't read many books.
If hand on heart, listeners, and this is an incredible admission to make, but if I was to... Are we talking fiction or non-fiction, Paul?
Oh, I think... Because this book is kind of halfway between the two. So let's go both. Let's be fair.
Okay. Well, so I actually do love reading non-fiction. I love doing research. A book has just arrived on Tibetan Buddhas, 108 of the best Buddhas in Tibet. And it's like... almost a form of torture where, because you know it's very tempting, because you know there are beautiful photographs of these Buddhas within the confines of the pages, within the front and the back, you know there are pages with lovely photos. Isn't it tempting, and I think most people will agree, that you'd like to have a peek at one of the great photos? Would you agree? But I've decided for the first time in my life that I'm actually going to read every single word from start to finish. So I've started. I must admit I'm slightly bogged down at the moment with pronunciation of certain ancient Buddhist terms to help sort of with the glossary, but that's the level of sort of... It's almost as though I'm torturing myself.
Mm.
Does that sound normal?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean... It's really tricky when you kind of commit to a thing. I went through an odd phase where I kind of got obsessed with Egyptology and I was trying to read old textbooks. But I guess what I'm trying to get us to on this episode is the fact that you're not a big reader, and one of the things that spurred me into writing Loose Units was trying to write a book that you would read.
Well, you nailed it, Paul, because they're punchy, because I don't have the greatest, although that's... I'm a bit of a contradiction, Paul. I was going to say I don't have the greatest
attention span.
Yeah. However, I actually do on certain things that I love.
Yes, but that's the ADHD. That's hyper-focus, right? So if you like something and if you're obsessed with it, you're into it, you can fixate on it for years and you'll never get bored, right?
Incredible. Yeah, amazing.
Like, it's like a laser beam, but if there's something you don't like, you literally cannot make a person with ADHD do it. You cannot do it. You can't.
No.
They have to be into it. Yeah, I kind of structured this book very deliberately around your cases and around your stories in a way that would be appealing to and readable by people who don't typically read books. So I wanted to... The reason the chapters are comically short at times is because I want people to feel like, holy shit, I finished three chapters tonight. For a non-reader, that is a... I think it's a really important feeling.
That's great. Yeah.
It's important. And this chapter is... The reason I bring this up, Dad, in a kind of circuitous way, is that this is like the shortest chapter in the book, but it's also, and I don't know if I've ever told you this, this is the chapter that got me the book deal.
Yeah, incredible.
So I pitched the book at Penguin, and then they said, can you write a sample chapter? And I wrote this chapter based on a story you told me, I think... Potentially shortly before the pitch. It was just something you kind of wheeled out. I think I said, do you have any interesting stories about the police? And you sort of just, I think you pulled this one out and I was quite surprised by it. Mm. It was one of those stories that doesn't have that much kind of, it's not a long story. It's extremely dense in that the things that happen in it are really contentious. And speaking of the, it was interesting talking just now about the assassin. Because this story does involve a firearm and the unconventional use of a firearm. Mm. I wanted to start the book with this story because I thought it was a cool cinematic way to kick things off. But chronologically, it was far more interesting to place it at the end of the book to highlight how much you changed since the beginning when you were like a 21-year-old rookie at the academy who didn't know, you know, anything about being a cop and arguably about being a man at that point. I mean, you were just a kid at this point. So it is chapter 45. It's called Back at the Start. I mean, where do we start here, Dad?
Well, my gut feeling, Paul, is that with what, in light of the way the world is now, before I explain the lead up to what I did that night.
Yeah.
In light of what's been happening in the last, say, 12 months around the world with you know, police brutality and, I mean, there's been police brutality since there were police forces.
Yeah.
But I actually don't know whether I'd actually want you to have this chapter in the book. Now, looking back on the entire experience, because I read it this morning and it kind of freaked me out a bit.
Right.
And I guess partly the reason I say that, dear Paul, is that, I mean, I've done some things over the last, you know, few years through my Instagram account, for example. I mean, let's take, people have opinions on, you know, how you should and shouldn't react. And I'm kind of expecting to get cop a bit of flack over this particular story.
It's got a touch of Dirty Harry to it, basically.
My alter ego, my hero.
Oh, sure. Ugh, geez. It's got a touch of kind of... it's like we now, as listeners and readers, know what kind of a person you are. And we know what you are capable of and what your inclinations are. And I think we know where your moral compass lies, right? So we know that this is all show, right?
Yep.
What you're about to tell us is all show. There's no, I mean, it's just cosmetic. It's you trying to look hard. It's just a kind of, and when, it is weird because when I started writing the book, this was not as much of a problem, at least certainly not in the public eye, right? It was just a kind of cool, fun, wacky, edgy thing that I put in to really grab the attention of the publishers and God, it worked, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, but you know, if any police officer, did what I did back then today.
Fired. No, beyond fired.
But beyond that, it'd make at least national news.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'd probably be... It'd have ramifications that would be far-reaching.
Can you imagine if there was a body cam of what you did in this chapter? I mean...
But in fairness to me, on that night,
yeah,
I was shit scared. That might not sound like much of a justification, but you've got to take you've got to go back to the very early 1980s, where Sydney was. It was just different. It was just completely and utterly different.
Walk us through that night.
Well, you know that I had the infamous White Holden with the fuzzy dice.
Yes.
And I had reported to work, now it must have been winter, because I had a jumper on, but it was a police issue jumper.
Mm-hmm.
It also had the New South Wales Police Force patches on either side, up near the your shoulders.
So anyone kind of pulling up next to you, provided they were like paying attention, you know, would probably see the patches and go, okay, no? Well,
no, because they were kind of concealed by the column between the, you know, the front seat and the back seats. There's a column where you've got the two doors. So that when you're sitting back in the driver's seat, my strong gut feeling is that the insignia would definitely be obscured.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
But the thing is, I reported to work at North Sydney Police Station, and for some wacky reason, and I just can't remember why, but it was quite unusual, but there must have been a police station somewhere in the inner city that required, for some reason or other, they wanted some extra police to do the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
So I've rocked up to North Sydney, and I would have been, I was in my early 20s, just out of my probation. I'm driving this 1960s Holden that would have been a perfect car for undercover police work. And I was just told that I had to go to one of the stations in the city, and all the stations in the CBD. So you had Central, you had Regent Street, Phillips Street, Darlinghurst, all the stations in the city were like, there was sort of the New South Wales police force. If you can imagine New South Wales being divided into sort of suburban police stations, country police stations, and then the inner city of Sydney. Mm-hmm. Now, the stations in the inner city were notorious for all things bad. And we were strongly advised as young police officers never, ever, ever to get involved in anything in the city. Just don't go there. When it was basically, we were told in no uncertain terms that we were never, ever allowed to come back to North Sydney Police Station. Even if we'd done a high-speed chase that ended up in, for example, Bondi, the eastern suburbs, there were strict instructions never, ever to go through King's Cross or Darlinghurst.
Jesus.
You were not allowed to do it. It was like, because remember Roger Rogerson was basically, and the police of the late 70s, early 80s, they ran basically the inner city. A couple of outer areas, like Flemington, there were a couple of really, really super dodgy, you know, police stations that were notorious. But you just weren't allowed. And I remember we drove through King's Cross one night, and by the time we got back to North Sydney Police Station, we were taken into the supervising sergeant's room, and he ripped into us and said, "What the fuck were you doing? Why?" Because any police that worked at Darlinghurst or the inner city, if they saw a car that clearly had the markings of another division, because like North Sydney's cars, as the listeners more than likely will know, that was 6th Division. So every single police car working out of North Sydney had a massive 6 on the bonnet and the roof. And of course, the inner city guys, they'd see a car and they'd go, because basically they just didn't want anyone to really get involved or see. Because if you're driving through the cross, for example, and you're from another area, but you see some heavy shit happen, you can't just pretend that you're not seeing it and drive past. You're a police officer.
You have to engage.
And you have to engage, but that means ultimately you'll end up back at, for example, Darlinghurst or Central Police cells, and that's a whole nother world.
Yeah, okay.
It's a if you want to talk about dystopian, fucked up, frightening shit, the inner city stations, that's what was happening. And I was being sent to one of these stations. It was winter, obviously, because I had my jumper on. I'm driving a shitbox Holden. I'm by myself, and it was a Sunday night. And I'm driving through George Street, which was so quiet. And it was just, there was just no one. There's no one on the, there are no pedestrians. It's like a ghost town. That's how Sydney was back in the early 80s. And as I'm driving to this godforsaken sort of despotic police station, I am quite aware that there's a car, because I'm in uniform. I'm kind of technically, I actually am working because I'm in uniform. I'm heading to another station, but I'm already getting paid because I'm in police time. And I see this car and I don't take a lot of notice of it. But as the listeners hopefully will recount, the worst thing in the world, the most suspicious thing you can ever see, day or night, in a car, is three blokes in a car. That is just, that's a given.
That's but kept that's, cropping up in the book, actually, yeah.
You know, the triumvirate. But in this particular case, I was aware that this particular car had three guys, but they were all in the front. So three guys sort of sandwiched in the front. They would have had a bench seat. And they're following, and I'm thinking, this is a bit weird, and I just felt a bit uneasy. And there were multiple sets of traffic lights. And every time I'd stop, this car would pull up alongside me. And I just couldn't resist it. And my window, I wound the window down a little bit, and I could hear these guys, and they were just itching for someone to kind of pick on, I didn't know. But I had nowhere to go. I had to get to work. I'm on George Street. It's a major street. And it must have probably 8 sets of lights. And every single time I'd sort of take off, then I'd slow down and the car would come up. And I looked to my right and I could see these guys. And these guys were, put it this way, if you saw them today, any person would go, these are definitely worthwhile crossing to the other side of the street.
Okay.
They were heavy. And one of them had jail tattoos. Back in the 1980s, listeners, there were certain tattoos that prisoners would have done in jail. They'd have a lot of tattoos on their fingers, and they had various things tattooed. But a classic tattoo back in the 80s that just said, "I am a gangster, I am a criminal, I have definitely done time at Long Bay, Pentridge, Grafton, Boggo Road, wherever," is they'd have a swallow on their neck.
Right.
It was like a tattoo saying criminal.
That's a fashion thing now. That tattoo is a fashion thing.
Isn't that weird?
Now. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's like a sailor's kind of swallow. Yeah, it's very common now.
It's amazing. When people used to come in, you know, one of the questions you had to ask people was, you know, did you have any tattoos? Do you have any tattoos, scars, sort of distinguishing marks? And people would show you and you'd sort of log them all. I just can't imagine what it's like in the police force now when they bring someone in and go, have you got any? And I have seen people with tattoos today that, well, there, of course there are people with tattoos that cover their entire body.
There are police with tattoos that cover their entire body. And yeah. That's great. Like, that's
no,
fine.
I don't have a problem with tattoos. You know, I think, you know, it's fascinating and incredibly artistic and for whatever reason. But these guys, they were fucking heavy guys. And I was sort of feeling a bit, and I had nowhere to go. I couldn't sort of, you know, I couldn't sort of just exit stage left. And I'm sort of feeling a little bit apprehensive. And I got the impression that they were actually going to maybe even get out of the car, and I don't know. It was terrible.
Well, you're quite a skinny guy. You're in the middle of the city. It's extremely quiet, and the only other car around is a car of what you would regard as clearly criminals of some sort.
Yeah, these three guys, they were on the prowl. They could have been on the way to do a break and enter, or worse, like a, you know, a smash and grab.
Mm.
People that were in the city at that time of night, that's when all the smash and grabs happen.
Yeah.
And So what I did, for some reason or other, I felt safe that I actually was fully armed, and I'm left-handed.
Mm.
So I unclipped my holster, weirdly, and then the lights changed. I went to the next set of lights, and then they came up next to me. And then one of them, they were also drinking, and one of them threw a can of beer, and it went through my window and hit me in the side of the head. And I just thought, fuck, this is fucked. And I'm right next to them, and they're sort of shouting and screaming and abusing me, but they had no idea I was a police officer. I'd actually manoeuvred my car because I was starting to think about what I could do in this particular situation if things got really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I manoeuvred the car just slightly towards the right, and knowing that when they were right next to me, I was fairly close to them. In other words, I could actually reach across and touch their car easily, bearing in mind there were three guys in the front seat and that they weren't teenagers. These were guys in their 30s, and I thought, fuck, this is heavy. I thought, shit, improvise, what can I do? So the next set of lights that we pulled up, I'd already unclipped my holster. Being left-handed, it's funny, I'm sitting at the computer and I'm sort of physically doing what I would have done that night. So I had my right hand on the wheel and I unclipped my 38 Smith & Wesson six-shot revolver, which doesn't have a safety. So cringe factor 10 there, listeners. And I, on my lap, which is completely concealed from, and this was a long phase on the lights, like at least a minute. They didn't have those things back in the day where at night time, you'd trip a little wire and it knows. Like if you come from a side street, you're not waiting for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have that back then. It was just on long timers. So sitting at the lights, I've passed the revolver across my lap, which is kind of weird because I'm not right-handed. And if you've ever tried to write with your other hand, you know how sort of weird it is. And I held the revolver in a very safe kind of, you know, really good, strong grip. And they're kind of I'm just trying to figure out, they're about 2 feet away from me, which is nothing. And I've just slowly reached, I've sort of lifted the gun and taken it out, and I've just held it at the temple of the passenger.
Fuck.
It took a little while for the other two to realize what was happening. But by me doing that, I then exposed my New South Wales Police insignia. It was on my right shoulder. And I've just sort of held it, didn't say anything, and they've just stopped talking. And they froze. And then I very casually and deliberately and slowly and just kind of sort of reversed the motion, withdrew the gun, put it into my left hand, reupholstered, lights turned green, I drove off. Now, George Street is a very, very long street. Goes through Chinatown, goes all the way up to Broadway, to the GPO, to Central Station, but it's got a huge dip in it, massive dip. It's like a huge U. So you start at the very top, you go all the way to the bottom, and then you go all the way up to the top.
Yeah.
And when I drove and kept driving and driving, I'm looking in my rearview mirror, and I can see this car behind me, but it just got smaller and smaller and smaller. And I watched the lights change and then change again. And the car never moved. They just sat there until I was completely out of sight. So, you know, that could have been a story that I took to the grave with me. But listeners, that particular story is the story, as Paul said, that got him the gig. Now, if we want to, you know, forensically go through the pros and cons of what I did that night, you know, because I've put it out there, I'm happy to cop a little bit of flack. But it's something I did. Just for you and the listeners, you know, these guys that had been clearly, you know, really sort of harassing me, imagine if I had been a lady, you know, by myself. Heading home from, imagine if I had been like a nurse coming home from a night shift or heading to work.
When you say harassing, what do you mean specifically?
You know, calling out just sort of profanities and sort of, you know, edging closer and swerving behind me. And they were really, I was scared. Trust me. I mean, and you know, road rage is not a modern phenomenon.
But you weren't angry when you did it, were you?
Oh, fuck no.
No, okay.
I was shit scared.
But they were, okay, so the streets are quiet. It's you and them, and they spot this car with this skinny bloke in a jumper kind of looking exhausted and irritated, and they basically start following you up George Street, hounding you a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then when they finally pull up to you next to the lights after kind of having, you know, edged closer and beeped and whatever, they then throw a beer can at your head.
A full can.
Oh, shit, I didn't realise it was full.
No, not an empty can. And cans in those days weren't aluminium either, they were steel.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, these guys were... They were itching. They just needed a tiny, tiny, maybe not even an excuse.
Okay.
You know, the worst case scenario for me would have been for me to have been dragged out of the car, and then it would have been on for young and old because it would have been potentially terrible. But Paul, you know, a number of times when I was off duty, I was going to work at Manly Police Station one night, coming into Manly. And a carload of similar types of guys, really fucking scary, they came up alongside me overtook me on double yellow lines. It was really scary. I've got no idea. They just chose me. And I had a jumper on, and I was heading to work. I was only a few hundred metres away from Manly Police Station, and they came around this corner, and they actually cut me off and pulled in front and stopped. And I almost ran into the back of them. And these psycho, just crazy bullies, just bullies, that's being too kind, these guys, they get out of the car and they start coming towards my car, and I get out and I, in a flash, pull my jumper off to expose my entire full police uniform.
Right.
And these things occasionally happen, but they just saw the uniform and then sort of like in a movie, they just slowed down and sort of almost did a reversal and all got back in the car and pissed off. But these things happen and can end terribly. The fact that that night I was in a uniform helped me.
Mm.
I didn't need to do anything. I just kind of just let them see that I was actually a police officer, and they then began to shit themselves. But, you know, the story in George Street, you know, you get a sense of things and how bad they could possibly end up. And, you know, this was, these guys were, they were out for some, you know. And there were quite a few thrill killings back in the 1970s and 80s where people, you know, criminals would just pick on totally 100% innocent men and women, and they'd kill them for no reason. It was a random thing. They were called thrill killings. And it was just so, you know, creepy. And I realized that night that I was, you know, by myself. And but there will be people, listeners, that'll sort of analyze and talk about the pros and cons. But, you know, I guess it's difficult looking back and saying, would you do it again? Because
yeah.
I've got 40 years of life experience now, so it's not really... You can't really answer that question.
No, context is everything. Mm. And also, I think, look, here's the thing. People have been listening to this show for years now. I mean, I think, you know, like four years, potentially. And they've read the books and they've been to the live shows and I feel like they know you by now. Mm. I don't think, first of all, this series started off with the book. So if you've read the book already, you know this story happened. This should not be a surprise to you. But what's interesting to me is kind of hearing it in context after having kind of gone through this enormous season of this show. Look, I'm really glad it got me the book. I'd never really sat down and kind of buried into, you know, the morality of it. But given the context, given the era, it does seem, you know, and knowing your intentions, it does seem slightly different now. So I don't think I guess what I'm trying to say, Dad, is I'm not judging you too harshly here. You know.
No. Yeah. No, that's cool. But, you know, I am quite aware of the gravitas of that particular story. Mm. And I'm more than aware of, in this whole world we live in now, you know, where things have changed generally for the better.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a funny world we live in. It's a funny, funny world.
God, what an episode. I did not expect to get here so soon. But, I mean, this chapter, weirdly, it's been going for a long time, but it feels in another way like it kind of flew by. So, but look, I'm really glad we talked through these stories, Dad, and I'm really glad we talked through this one in particular. And I'm really curious to see what listeners think of this chapter in the book and what they think of your insights. Mm. And I do hope they won't judge you too harshly, given the context. I feel like, if anything, this episode makes this chapter work better, you know? I feel like it clarifies a lot of things. So, anyway, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Loose Units Origins. We'll see you at the end of the week for another episode of Loose Units Loose Ends. Have a great week, everyone. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.